It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. This is the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, the Tarncast.
We are in.
We're in. We're rolling. We're recording sound. Ladies and gentlemen, what you're hearing is a deliciously swallowed taste of some Pinot Noir wine drank by your host, Heath Cullens. And I'd like to just get out of the gate here really quickly and announce our very special guest. You may know him. You may not. I'm going to guess that you do if you're here. Mr. Todd Robert Anderson, everyone.
Hey.
T-R-A.
Oh, wow.
T-R-A.
Wow.
T-R-A.
Wow.
That was great. That was the best thing that's happened to me in a while.
You deserve it.
Yeah. And I got to drive around Los Angeles all day today.
Oh, wait.
You'd think that would be the highlight.
I want to hear about the drive, but I just realized I forgot to say you're listening to the Tarncast. You're listening to the Tarncast with very special guest Todd Robert. Todd Robert, T-R-A-T. All right, back up. Okay, now you're driving.
Driving. That's all. That's all.
You had to drive all over LA today on a Saturday.
On a Saturday.
Because that's the new landscape of things in this town.
That's sometimes you have to go audition for stuff on Saturday.
It's not right.
I feel like things get put off, you know, maybe for long lunches or affairs. I don't know.
I guess upside, traffic better?
Yep. That's the good part of auditioning on holidays.
You're in and out quick.
Yeah, you get over the hill and you do it. And you know, the waiting rooms tend to be thinner as well.
Because not many people want to get out on
a Saturday. Oh, well, a lot of people have respect for themselves. Yeah. They're like, fuck that. I'm not going to a fucking Saturday audition.
They're in Palm Springs.
I'm going to hang out with my family.
They're in Big Bear.
Yeah, exactly.
Another weekending.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they took a quick flight to Seattle.
Yeah,
to Portland.
They're in Reno. They're in Vegas.
Maybe they're at the Bumbershoot Music Festival.
Maybe. Maybe they're just up in Taft.
I don't know Taft. Where's Taft?
Next to Bakersfield.
Ooh.
You know that movie with Robin Williams and Kurt Russell called The Best of Times?
Do I know that movie? No.
It's a football movie.
There's a football movie? I don't know. Yeah. Now I'm really ashamed.
But it's based on a true story.
And it's set in Taft?
Set in Taft.
I would love it if you brought all that up just to bring up a really great movie I don't know, but had nothing to do with Taft at all. That would have been a really sweet, sweet move.
A total non-sequitur.
I'm recording. How can I?
Have you seen The Music of Chance?
No. This is the thing. If you start asking me these questions, and I feel like as the host, I should be asking questions, and you as the guest should be answering them. But if you keep asking me about movies, you're just going to get on tape digitally that I just don't know a lot about movies. People think I do.
You know a lot about television, would you say?
I know. I think I know as much to be dangerous, but not to really know a lot.
Not to know a lot.
Yeah. Like, I get myself into trouble.
I see.
I'll talk myself into a corner at a cocktail party.
Why? Because you'll make up some shit that didn't happen
but
on
I
the show.
Probably, or I'll like make a comment about how the show did this thing or that thing narratively or camera wise or something, and I've confused it with a whole other movie or television show, and then the person that I'm talking to created both of them.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
it'll be something like that.
Yeah,
have you created any television shows I don't know of?
I have not created any.
Okay,
I'm not in the creating TV shows
business
part of things. Yeah,
no.
I mean, I try to think of ideas for TV shows, and they're never. I don't think they're very good.
Me too, and they aren't.
I love TV shows, and I get fascinated when they capture my interest and when they excite me creatively.
In,
but I have to, I always have to reverse engineer why I like it.
Oh, I see. It gets you on a gut, and then you have to figure out
yeah.
what
later. I go. Your gut most first. Of my leaps are of faith.
You go navel first yeah. into the world.
Yeah,
I like that. Yeah. You know, it's vulnerable, but there's a strength in that.
There is a strength.
There's a big yeah. strength in that. Yeah. You know, the strongest lion in the pride just flips over and is like, "Look at my belly. What are you gonna do about
what are you
it?
Do
check
about
out
that?
My guts."
Yeah.
So, scratch this belly. Yeah. You're the strongest lion of the pride.
That's true. That's
I've
true.
Always thought that about you.
Yeah.
You have three names. That's a strong thing.
It's a very strong. I have red hair.
Powerful.
Yeah.
You look a lot. For those who haven't ever seen Todd that are listening, he looks a lot like the red haired guy from Game of Thrones. He's like a more yeah. rugged, sword wielding yeah. version of that guy.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah.
Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm somewhere in between there and Cole Hauser, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, or who's that guy that's in London is falling?
Gerard Butler?
Yeah, yeah, you're like between the guy on Game of Thrones and Gerard Butler.
Boy, he's in the doghouse with me, that guy.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I don't know enough about him.
I haven't been I haven't been more excited to see a movie than I have, or I was, to see Geostorm.
And he was the top dog in Geostorm. He was the number one.
He was the guy.
Was he the storm? Or
no, that was sort of the problem with the film.
Was he was not the storm.
There was no Geostorm.
Wait, and the film at all?
They threatened a Geostorm, and there were some pretty big disasters, but there was never a Geostorm.
So what you're telling me is that this whole movie was a bit of a tease.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
Yeah, and it took a long time to get to the, hey, sorry, but we stopped the Geostorm.
And Butler stopped it?
Of course he did.
And so now that's why you have beef with him?
Yep.
You wanted him to fail and let the
Geostorm... I wanted him to fail so we could see the Geostorm.
Well, is that his fault? I mean, that's kind of... He's dead. That guy's a winner. He's not going to fail. Right? Right.
No, I mean, I get the idea. I'm supposed to breathe a sigh of relief that Gerard Butler saved me from the Geostorm. But what happened was I was like, I wanted the Geostorm.
Yeah, I feel like that's not unreasonable.
No. I mean, when you look at a movie as dumb as 2012, it keeps you right in there. Yeah. You're in the horrible end of the world the whole time. Yeah. And that's what Geostorm should have been.
And there is not a more end of the world title than Geostorm.
Yeah, no.
It's way more. 2012 is like, hey, come see my movie. It might be about the end of the world.
Yeah.
Geostorm is like, kicks in the door. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Shit is ending. Come now.
And it's because of, you know, global warming reaching its boiling point mm-hmm, and past mm-hmm. Point of no return. Mm-hmm. It should in no way be caused by a software problem.
No. This is in the movie.
Which...
Now you're just not spitballing here. That's the actual
film. I am spoiler alert after the fact. if that spoil... I mean, by the time you get to that point in the movie, you're probably glazed over and not listening.
You're not paying attention.
But I happen to...
You've spoiled it for the 12 people that actually saw the
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I saw it in one of those theaters that'll bring you beers.
Oh, nice. That seems so requisite for this.
I got my second round.
Okay.
Right before that scene.
Did you then spit take the second round?
I wish I had, but I didn't. It was more of a gulp that happened, actually, because I couldn't quite believe what I was hearing, and I had to process that they were blaming this weather stuff on software trouble.
Cock-teased version of the end of the world is caused by a software glitch.
Right.
That's essentially the log line of Geostorm.
Yeah, that
okay.
is.
All right. Well,
we'll get Gerard Butler.
It makes sense now to me.
Yeah.
I'm sure that I enjoyed London was falling, has fallen.
No, I was a big... I was... trusting Gerard on the Geostorm because
his
I had so
his
much
taste
fun
as an artist.
Yeah, with his but
well, he
his,
wouldn't
like,
be in a bad
movies,
movie.
Like I enjoy the truth is I like Law Abiding Citizen.
Okay,
and yeah. I like both Olympus Has Fallen and London Has Fallen.
So you're top to bottom Gerard fan, but this movie now has caused you to second guess.
Yeah, I mean I even liked Gamer.
Okay,
I sat through that shit.
You're in deep with this guy.
Yeah, I'm in deep.
Gerard, if you're listening, and I know you are, I want our guest this week is upset. He's a huge fan. He's biggest fan of yours probably in the world. We have him on tonight's podcast called Toncast, in case you guys missed that earlier. And he is an upset fan. So if can we get callers? Is that how this works? Call in, email. You can find Todd.
We'll wait on the calls.
Yeah.
I'm sure the boards are lighting up right now.
Here's the thing. The boards are lighting up. Gerard, you have some splaining to do to your number one fan. Are you the president of his fan club?
I'm not a president. I'm just sort of an active member. Silent partner.
Partner in the fact. You were in on the ground floor of Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
He's been there since day one.
Well, no, he didn't have me. I wasn't a fan of 300.
No.
Or his romantic comedy.
Okay.
Things.
You're post 300.
But once he got into the hard R rated action outside of the silly cartoony 300, then I was like,
you like a little grit on your Gerard.
I like this Gerard. Yeah. He's gritty. Yeah.
Some coarse cracked pepper.
He's mean.
Uh-huh.
In that rock and roller.
I didn't know this, but I'm glad I learned your feelings about Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
They're not dissimilar to my own. I just think they're more, they're felt deeper because they're understood on a more levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I won't see Geostorm now.
Don't.
I won't. I will not.
Don't. Nobody should see Geostorm. But he's got another movie coming out, so whatever.
He'll do, and that'll be better probably, right?
Well, it looks more like, war action type of deal. So
back in his wheelhouse a little
bit. Yeah, and that looks...
Does he play a disgruntled scientist in Geostorm?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's exactly what he is.
Yeah, you don't listen to me.
You didn't listen to me.
You're the frog in the beaker or whatever.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay. It's an all right role. It's like a Cassandra of sorts.
Yeah, yeah. But he's bitchy about it the whole time.
Oh, wow.
I mean, when you talk about Pierce Brosnan and Dante's Peak, he literally gave him that speech about the frog and the beaker.
Yeah, yeah.
The boiling water thing. But he let it go pretty fast.
Uh-huh.
When it was time to fight the volcano.
And Gerard is like, I guess.
All time he's passive aggressive.
And then, joke's on you, Gerard, it doesn't even end up happening.
No, yeah.
So now you look like an asshole.
Well, you saved the world because of a fucking software problem? I don't know.
I mean, that's kind of a little bit, feels like a little Independence Day there. We're going to download a little virus.
Yeah, but it's not, it's like...
That's a little more active, though, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like figuring out an alien's technology as opposed to realizing that geostorm is because we screwed up some software.
We didn't carry the one. This is the sound of my wine being no longer... It's completely empty.
We can get more wine.
I don't want to interrupt anything. I feel like there's a real nice flow here. We're really...
Easy to get more wine.
We're getting to the
bottom. You just keep talking.
Okay.
You just reflect on the conversation.
I'm feeling like I know more about...
I hope I don't get distracted by Krampus.
Please don't get distracted by Krampus. Krampus is playing in the living room. Todd has a home that is well decorated for the season. It's October 28th, so that season, of course, Thanksgiving. But it's impressive. There's an alien painting on the wall. There's two, not just one, but two posters for John Carpenter's The Thing. They're both quite good. One's kind of a silhouetted wolf running through an Arctic landscape.
It's
and
fan
the,
art, they call that. This is the name of the wine you're drinking.
Irony.
Yeah, how about
irony.
That?
I like that. Yeah. I like that. And the second poster depicts, for those of you who have seen The Thing, the most seared in your mind image, probably the Petri dish is full of blood. And if that's not the image that comes to mind... And if
it's probably that weird vagina that Wilford Brimley is digging into in that autopsy sequence.
It should be that scene. And if it's not either of those, then stop listening now.
No. Then it's probably the guy's head.
The dog.
Sprouting legs and crawling away.
Yeah. And then after that, it's the dog's head with like...
Yeah.
I'm glad we ran that down.
And then after that, it's just Kurt Russell playing solitaire or playing chess with a computer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he dumps his whiskey into the computer.
Oh, because it beats him.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great scene.
Calls the computer a bitch for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, his relationship with technology, with exploration. Maybe we're going too far. Maybe we're poking maybe our noses right. where it shouldn't be.
Yeah, you're probably
maybe,
right.
Maybe we're not supposed to know all the things we're trying to know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that was what that moment was about. I don't know. I wasn't the filmmaker. I'm John Carpenter. Get him the host.
He's very cranky.
I've gathered that from the interviews I've seen with him. But I, you know, boy, is he having a resurgence right now.
Everybody's well, because he was copying him. And he was touring.
Yeah, and everybody's just copying him.
Sure, sure. You know? And they're remaking all
what's
this
old
stuff.
Is new again.
Yeah. And that's what he said in an interview. They like, how do you feel about them remaking this, that, or the other thing? He's like, I don't care as long as they send me money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, send him money.
Yeah, send him
money. You're just remaking his ideas.
Yeah. Well, some of them he just directed, but.
Yeah, did he get something? Did he get out there? He's been kicking it? Doing a little something?
Well, no, the last thing he did was a, like, a movie wise, was a straight to video thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really liked, I think, and it was early in the Carpenter Love Fest, the Guest.
Oh, yeah, The Guest is
yeah.
good.
Yeah, that was super Carpenter.
Yeah, that is big Carpenter-y. Time. Yeah.
That I enjoyed that. And then,
but that's its own thing. I mean, it's not, if it's got echoes of Carpenter, I think that's a, can only be a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm not dogging it out. Yeah, yeah. No. That was like John Carpenter stuff, but in a genre, felt like a genre he didn't really do. And that was what I liked about
it. Oh, I see, yeah.
You know, that it was applying kind of the same filmmaking stuff that he does, but to a story that you wouldn't think he would
do. He would do, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the right way to pay homage.
Yeah. Take some of the paintbrushes, but you go over there and you paint something different.
Yeah, you do your own thing.
I do like it. So these are fan...
That's all fan art.
How many? I mean, these has all been discussed a million times on your podcast because it's right here on this wall.
No. I feel like this house is relatively new.
Oh, no, right. So I'm just making it so next guy, you're like, Heath covered this.
Yeah. We already talked about this shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Move on to something more.
That's one of my favorite pieces of fan art back there.
The Steven Seagal is out for justice.
Yeah.
Tritone. It's I'll paint with some words here for you folks. It's Steven Seagal looking at you.
That was the heyday of Seagal.
Yeah, this is Seagal heyday. Beret. Puppy dog in his arm, shotgun slung over his shoulder, out for justice in a bold kind of, I wish I knew a font that I could tell you about, but it's red, it's dark red.
It's like murder font.
Yeah, it's murder font. It's the font that if your pen was a knife and you were cutting into someone, that's what the font
that's
would
what
be.
It looks like, yeah.
And everything else is black and white and gray tones. The dog... very adorable. I think it's some kind of maybe a retriever type puppy.
Yeah, or and, it could. I don't know.
And in the background is a Ferris wheel, a silhouetted. And is that some kind of smokestack?
Smokestack. Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful fan poster.
It's wonderful.
You guys should see it. You guys should come over and see it.
Yeah,
you should
come over whenever you want to.
You should host. This podcast just to see the poster.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
There's also a scary Marilyn Monroe with like the that's sense of a vagina dentata.
Very old and abused Clive Barker print that was signed by Clive
Mr. Barker himself.
Barker himself.
Who little known fact, did have sex with Marilyn Monroe.
I did not know that.
That's
not what you
I'm
would...
the only one that knows it.
I kind of assumed he was super gay.
He was, except for that. He was like, the gayest thing I could do right now is have sex with Marilyn Monroe.
That's a pretty gay move.
Yeah. It's you've heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, that's and news.
Probably last. Let's hope. Wait, a cease and desist letter has just arrived. And there's an alien breeder throw pillow. I just noticed that.
Yeah, you gotta have.
What are they called?
Those.
What are, like
face huggers?
Yes, but there's the xenomorph. What is this phase?
I don't know. The xenomorph is like that's bullshit from sequels. In the Alien, it was just this facehugger.
It was alien.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get into some mythology talk here. I thought maybe you would know.
Well, are you?
No, I'm like the face hugger of mythology talk. I'll like get in there and suck something out from somebody, but I can't. I'm not going to impregnate you with any knowledge.
But there's also, and now they're talking about another one where they just negate some of the mythology that was created by sequels. I don't know.
I think the guiding mythology is let's make a little bit of money off of a thing that has teeth inside teeth.
Yeah, I think you're right.
More or less. Yeah. Acid blood.
Acid blood and drooly. They're very drooly.
Drooly and acid bloody. Everything else I think is up for grabs, personally.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Do whatever the fuck you want.
You can put Winona Ryder in it.
Yeah, you can have it fight predators. Yeah. Because that makes...
You know, if you really think about all the sequels... Uh-huh. And I did like,
and I do. And I'm sure
like,
you do.
I liked Aliens a lot.
Yeah.
Sure, of course.
Well, yeah.
But... Of the all the other ones, and I include Prometheus in this, and the most recent Covenant.
Yeah,
yeah.
I just saw that, but I forgot everything about it. It's one of the most
critically overrated movies.
I could tell
since
you
since Prometheus.
I.
It's like I'm like, what are you guys talking about? And now Blade Runner 2049. Don't get me started on it.
I haven't seen Blade Runner yet, so I can't speak to that. I can say that Covenant, and I can't speak to Covenant, even though I have seen it, because it passed through me like those old chips that were made of that stuff that they had to stop making because it made people
like wow chips.
That movie just moved. I don't know.
Had a warning on the thing.
They had a warning that it would make your ass blow out. People still ate them. But. Alien Covenant was that for me. I mean, it didn't make my ass blow, but in regards to it left nothing behind.
It was, you're speaking metaphorically.
You didn't have
a literal diarrhea.
Yeah, I'm assuming that people that listen to your Tomcast have a certain level of understanding of that.
Well, yeah, that's true, but they're looking for diarrhea stories. I think mostly. If you're talking metaphorically, then they're
going to lean in and hope it's literal. That makes sense. Well, I'm glad you know your audience.
Yeah, I do.
I don't remember anything about that movie, and I wasn't all that impressed with Prometheus, as I recall, either.
No, I mean, Alien Covenant was far and away an improvement over Prometheus.
Yeah.
But it was also weighed down by the fact that
it had to
keep in all this Prometheus shit.
The Fassbinder of it all.
Yeah, Fassbinder.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy's not batting 1,000 anymore. He keeps turning up in these turkeys.
Yeah. Yeah. He's cashing those checks.
Yeah, but it's like,
look. Even Gerard Butler did Geostorm.
But Gerard Butler, like, you can't understand what that guy's saying. Fassbender's a really good actor.
That's true, yeah.
Like, he's like the fact that he's already
you
doing
this
kind of
garbage. You can get a sense that he's slumming it for real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little disappointing, that's all.
I agree. It's hard to...
He has such a big penis.
Yeah, huge. Which might be why he was into wanting to do Aliens. He was like, this kind of might... It's so big, it kind of looks like the mouth that shoots out of the alien's mouth, and there's, a kinship there.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm stretching. I'm trying to justify his poor choices lately.
Yeah, well, no, he probably just wants money for something.
For something.
You know, maybe about one
penis
of those...
reduction surgery.
Maybe he wants a smaller peen.
It's possible.
Because it's hard to run with that thing.
Yeah, it's hard to run. Also, probably it's just a general strain on you to pump that much blood.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He must pass out a lot. That's rough.
Maybe that's why he said yes to those movies, is there was too much blood in his pants. And his brain was deprived and he made some bad decisions.
That makes total sense. Because he had erections all the time.
So I hope that he does a couple more giant, like, stinkers, gets the reduction, then goes back to Oscar movies only.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. I think that's a good thing to wish for Michael Fassbender.
I think he'd be happy knowing that we were wishing that for him.
Yeah. I mean...
If my friends were thinking that level of positive, supportive kind of thoughts about me, I feel good.
I mean, I haven't seen any of these stinker movies, to be honest with you. Maybe I'd like them.
I don't know. I don't even know what stinker movies you're talking about.
Assassin's Creed.
Oh, yeah. I saw about a few minutes of that on HBO. It was on the free. It popped up there on the freebie.
Yeah.
And even I would have to be paid to see that. It's a movie made from, frankly, and I'll say it, and this will be controversial, might be the most controversial thing said, It's a movie made off of a bad video game. It's
Tried to is that why the movie Jaws sucks? Because I played that Jaws video game and it's awful.
Yeah. I don't know why Spielberg wanted to make that movie. He just loved the video game as a kid, I guess. It was weird.
Weird choice.
It's so weird.
So he was batting 1,000 up till then.
I know, and it's just the things that you're obsessed with, sometimes that's where your blind spot is.
It can be your undoing.
He loved that video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was his Heaven's Gate.
One of my favorite parts of the new season of Stranger Things is about a video game. There's Dragon's Lair. Remember that video game?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so that's in the movie. I mean, that's I think it's in the pilot.
There was a movie, Dragon Slayer, too.
Yeah, yeah, Dragon's Lair. Not Dragon Slayer.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Dragon's Lair, the video game where you play a knight and you have to, like, press left, press right, and the timing. It was, like, a groundbreaking game because it looked very cinematic.
Yeah, I actually remember that game.
And it was, like, one of the first games that cost 50 cents to play. It wasn't just a quarter.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. That's probably the best part of Stranger Things too.
I was more a pinball guy.
I was all over. I like it all. I like it all.
Yeah, I didn't get into the video games as much. I like the shooting ones. I like the ones where you shoot stuff.
Like Buck Hunter kind of thing.
Yeah. My son went to a party, you know, a birthday party at one of these places.
I've heard of birthday parties.
Rent it out, you know, and they bring in the cake for you, and the pizzas.
Nice. It's like a one-stop shop kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you don't have to clean up. So, and this one, it was themed like it was just an old school arcade. Like,
I like it. Where's this?
It's in West Hills, I think.
Okay. All right. And you just rent out the whole place, play your arcades, play your pinballs.
Yeah, everybody, and all the games are free. But one of the ones they had in there was Duck Hunt.
Duck Hunt's a blast.
It's the easiest video game.
It's very easy.
It's so easy.
Yeah. I mean, when you get later in, I feel like the guys that come out... No, I'm thinking of Hogan's Alley. Never mind. Never mind. That was the other shooting game for NES. Yeah, Duck Hunt. I mean, maybe when they were two ducks, wasn't it hard to get them both? Or no?
Sometimes they'd speed up a little, but...
You were just killing it.
Yeah, it was easy.
Yeah. So is actual duck hunting.
Really?
I don't know.
I've never...
Nor have I. I don't know, somewhere there's a duck hunter that's like really pissed off that I'm saying
anything. Like duck hunting is not easy.
I mean, I've shot skeet. And if shooting duck is anything like shooting skeet, then duck hunting is easy.
Okay. So but you just know how to track the thing that's flying?
But you're shooting a shotgun, so it just like it's this big, you know, a hula hoop size ring of pellets
right
at this thing that's made of feathers and soft skin. Like, I don't know. I'm talking out of my ass. It could be very, very difficult.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never hunted anything. I had a friend who was... He hunted quite a bit.
Yeah, the most dangerous game.
I don't know if he did that. I hope not. It's mostly into deer.
He might be doing it right now to you, just on a really long timeline.
Oh, please don't say that. I got enough trouble. I don't need that guy coming after me.
But it's like the idea is to kill you as close to your own natural death as possible. So it's like...
It's just like one last jolt.
It's like 1 second before you're going to go anyway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you That's step like out. What Bill Hicks used to suggest people do with their, ailing grandparents.
Oh, yeah, is take them out just right before...
Put them in a stunt in a Chuck Norris movie.
Oh.
So the stunt's spectacular. They die in the stunt.
Uh-huh. I like that. But that's solid.
They get to meet Chuck Norris.
They get to meet Chuck Norris right before they die. And then they're recorded forever. They live forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially, what he's pitching is a gate to immortality.
It's immortality.
Bill Hicks was a genius.
By way of Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or could we maybe just make it now in a Gerard Butler movie?
Well, I feel like if Bill Hicks was still with us, he would.
He would be.
He would be having a lot of fun with the Gerard Butler.
Oh yeah, he. I have a feeling he, you, and Bill Hicks would see eye to eye.
I think on most stuff.
On most stuff, particularly on Geostorm.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he would have been
like probably what that. Would happen is if he was still alive. He's still alive, but you still don't know him.
Right.
Then he listens to your podcast because a friend's like, you got to listen to this thing called Tonecast. It's great. And then he hears you talk about this and he reaches out to you. And yeah. then from your synergy on Gerard Butler, you guys become great friends.
I love that story. I love that story.
I don't know much.
It's a beautiful story.
But I know that that's the fate of the, in the universe, in the multiverse where Bill Hicks is still alive, that's how you and he become best friends.
That's very cool. Yeah. Can I be friends with Kurt Russell too? Like,
no. No. Kurt is not a fan. He frankly doesn't agree with you on the whole Butler thing. And in addition to that, you didn't mention any of his favorite moments from the thing. So he's... There's no hope there.
He didn't like pouring scotch on a computer?
No. He's a lot of like very specific B-sides to his favorite parts of the thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And he doesn't want to talk about them. It's weird. He's very sensitive.
Like, is it like when he keeps calling the Norwegians Swedish? Is it that?
That's number two.
That's on the list.
He won't tell you the first one. He'll never reveal it. So for all you know, maybe that is. You could have just got it.
Maybe.
But all his favorite moments from the thing are actually moments from Big Trouble in Little China.
Because he's confused?
He's confused. And it was just a much more fun shoot. Let's be real.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The thing was freezing.
I'll bet Overboard was great, too.
Oh, he loved most of... Well, all of his favorite moments from Big Trouble in Little China are from Overboard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just trades up.
Yeah, of course. But never sideways, so there's no references to Tequila Sunrise.
What was the last thing we saw him, Mr. Kurt Russell, in?
It had to be Fate of the Furious, right?
Oh, right.
Or Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which came first?
Oh.
Which came second?
I think. Oh, was Guardians second?
I think Furious is first.
Yeah,
so Guardians. Guardians was the last thing I can think of. That's right,
he was in that. He was the baddie. That's the guy... So who was it in Tron that was the baddie? That was the exact... Basically the same role. Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges, yeah.
So when you get to a... Like,
but he's not bad. He's not a baddie. He's a... It's confusing.
Right, but doesn't... I feel like at some point he winds up in a somewhat like position of the antagonist, right?
Yeah, he's...
Or there's some movie where Jeff Bridges does that.
Well, I think he's been a bad guy a bunch of times, but he is bad in the first Tron.
Yeah.
But then in the second Tron, he's good.
I'm talking Tron 1.
Because it's the pro... But it was the program, not the man, or something like that. I can't remember.
I just remember there's a scene where Jeff Bridges is like, "Join me and make things, we'll be powerful."
Right.
And there's the same scene in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 with Kurt Russell. We could do it together, Chris Pratt.
Awesome. But wasn't that... That wasn't... Are you sure?
I'm not, but I just feel like...
I thought that was David Warner, who was the bad guy in Tron.
I don't know. I feel like that age of actor...
Uh-huh.
I've seen all of them in some movie where they're like, "Join me and we'll be popular."
I think David Warner's done that like 9 or 10 times at least.
I can't even... I'm sure he has. But I think, like, Jeff Bridges, Kurt Russell, Sam Elliott? No. Sam Elliott to a degree. But, like, there's this age of dude who you don't always play bad guys. Right. But when you do, it's the... And they all end up doing it. It's the "Join me, we power together" thing.
Yeah.
I feel like I see that a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's definitely, it's certainly a comic book cliche thing. Comic book movie cliche.
What do you, you know, you're on your waning days of virility and power, so you're like, "Young dude!
Yeah, let's do this together.
Say, come on, help me!
Yeah, I can't get it up anymore.
I can't get it up, jack my butt." And then your job is the other guy, he's like, "No, I gotta kill you," because that's what Oedipus and Freud said. And that's movies.
That is movies. In a nutshell.
We really
just figured it out.
We buttoned the shit up tonight.
There's no point in going to the movies anymore. We just ruined them. Don't need to go. Certainly don't need to see Pumpkinhead. That's my favorite movie poster. That
cruel, devious, pure as venom. All hell's broken loose.
And it's just two creepy hands holding a rotten pumpkin.
That movie... I love that type of movie because it was just really about how awful can we make the monster look and be.
It yeah.
Just basic.
That was just, and Stan Winston directed that one. But yeah. It was just, he was directing around a giant creature.
Yeah.
He did not give a fuck about Lance Henriksen.
No.
Did not care about that guy. No. Go stand over there. Look worried.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this awesome puppet over
he's
here.
He's like, I played a great clone. And he's like, I don't care. Not in this movie.
And it is. I'm a really scary vampire, though.
Yeah.
That's not what this is.
This movie's called Pumpkinhead. It's not called anything to do with Lance.
See, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have the Pumpkinhead look like you. So you don't need to worry. So
you relax.
Just chill out.
Look, Pumpkinhead is on set. You can go to your trailer. We'll call you when Pumpkinhead's ready for you. I wonder, did Stan think Pumpkinhead was alive? Did he treat it like...
I bet, yeah.
Was he like at he's like craft a service? Method, like they served him food?
He's like a method special effect, practical special effects guy.
He had a trailer.
All of the things that he created were alive. In his mind.
Still are.
They still are. Walking the earth after
I mean, him. Pumpkinhead will live forever, though.
Yeah, sure. Especially if they keep making those Sci-Fi Channel sequels.
Do they still keep pumping those out?
No, they only made two of them.
But there's been more than...
You know, if you fail on the Sci-Fi Channel, that's...
That is abject failure. That is... When people talk about, like, everyone has their rock bottom...
Yeah.
No. The quantitative rock bottom is... Failing an established
franchise
on sci-fi. Losing money.
There are so many examples of that, too. And the only one that had staying power for some reason was friggin' Lake Placid.
Was that a sci-fi original?
No.
No, but it but
they,
went there.
But then they started making those cheapy sequels. Like Pumpkinhead was a just indie horror movie.
Right.
And then there was a weird sequel...
Which was another release in theaters thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was like VHS days when they'd kind of release something in the theater to get the picture in the paper, and then it was all about the VHS release.
Mm.
Kind of right before actual direct-to-video production, I guess.
Right.
But the ones for the Sci-Fi Channel. Like, and one was like... the idea didn't bother me.
No.
One was a Hatfield's versus McCoy's story.
Okay.
With Pumpkinhead.
Was he Hatfield or McCoy?
Well, I can't remember how it turned out.
Who did he side with? I feel like whoever he sided with.
I can't remember.
Or they had to work together to stop Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, right? The clans come together. Okay. Common enemy.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, the enemy of my enemy.
But then one of the Hatfields and or McCoys like summoned him.
Yeah, because they were trying to get over
but
on
the thing is
and then you can't control the monster.
He's an asshole. He kills anyone in his way.
Yeah, and
until
so,
the vengeance is complete,
right?
And that will, regardless of size,
he's going to bump by your sister on the way to kill the McCoys.
He's going
to
go,
Johnny Hatfield.
Yeah.
What did you think that was going to happen?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
no, he wasn't thinking. He obviously didn't see the first one.
No.
Lance Henriksen made all the mistakes that we could have all learned from.
Right, and apparently people were ignoring him as much as Stan did, and no one learned.
Yeah, no one learned. No one learned.
If there's one thing you do before this Halloween, ladies and gentlemen, it's watch Pumpkinhead and pay attention, for God's sake.
Pay attention. You don't even need to go and watch Pumpkinhead 2 Blood Wings. You don't.
But you can.
You can. It's got Andrew Robinson. It's an oddity. It's interesting. It's self-aware, you know. It's one of those kind of movies.
It knows what it is.
Yeah, it's having fun with it, you know. But the Sci-Fi Channel ones, it's like the Anaconda sequels.
Were those not as good as the Anaconda originals?
Well, the Anaconda is, or Anaconda, as yeah. it's commonly known. I call it the Anaconda.
Yeah, well, because it...
Because there's other Anaconda films. And
you give it the respect it deserves.
Yeah, the Anaconda. Is not a... it's not a good movie.
What?
It's not.
Says you, but...
It's not.
Well, we can move past that. To the second part of your thesis.
Right. So, and then Anaconda's Hunt for the Blood Orchid.
Right.
You'd think would be a unbelievable piece of shit because it's a sequel to Anaconda.
Okay.
Which was just fun, you know, because John Voight got barfed up and he winked at the camera.
Yeah.
We all know that's why
Cube's
we like,
in that too, right?
Cube's in that, J-Lo's in that, Owen Wilson's in that. It's just a fun thing to watch.
Yeah.
It's like a disaster movie with an all-star cast, but that didn't know that's what it had.
Right.
And Eric Stoltz, of course, sleeps through the most of the film. He gets hit by something.
This is like pre-Snakes on a Plane. This is like the previous generation.
Yeah, this is what Snakes on a Plane wanted to be. Yeah, but you can't set out to be something. You
can't catch lightning in a bottle by running outside during a thunderstorm with a glass jar, right?
No, you can't.
No.
You really
can't. I mean, maybe you could.
I don't know.
I don't know if you attach it. It sounds like that's a dangerous proposition.
Why do you want to try to do that?
Stay inside.
You're going to get hurt.
You're going to get electrocuted one way or another.
That's not worth it.
If you learn one thing from Pumpkinhead.
Or The Great Outdoors.
Or
it's another important
Powder, movie. Right? Doesn't that movie have lightning strikes in it?
I don't know. I don't watch these child molester films.
Yeah, right. That's what happened with that movie.
Yeah, well, no, and he's the Jeepers Creepers guy.
But in real life.
No, he made those Jeepers Creepers movies.
Right, but also in real life,
he's a Jeepers Creeper. Yeah.
Wasn't that what Disney found out?
And there's another one coming out.
Another Powder?
No, another Jeepers Creepers.
Oh, okay.
Powder did not launch a franchise, as it turns out.
Funny thing about having a pedophile in your lead role.
Yeah, the crazy thing, Robert Shea was really behind turning Powder into a franchise. But it was the only one. I don't know.
Tentpole. It's a tentpole. I'm telling you, it's a tentpole.
I was just reading about the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise.
Is there more to come? I mean, of course. They'll do it again.
Maybe, I don't know. But it was more just like frustrating because every time I read something about those movies, it's like Wes Craven just really got fucked.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't surprise me.
Like, he got fucked out of... That movie was low budge.
Right.
And he worked for like DGA scale or whatever.
Yeah.
And he had no rights to the characters. He had no rights to anything. It was just...
Had he made anything before that?
Yeah, well, low budge stuff. But he made
so Hills of Eyes
and...
Oh, he made Hills of Eyes.
Yeah, and The Last House on the Left.
And he just had bad representation and bad lawyers?
Well, it's because he was coming from this low-ass budget world into a sudden budget world. I mean, he was making grindhouse cinema with porn stars, for Christ's sake.
And
I mean, he's like what a studio person considered a risk at the time. Now they troll looking for creeps to direct movies.
How many did he do?
Of the Nightmare movies?
Yeah.
Well, the first one was him.
Yeah.
And then he did Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which he wrote and directed.
But nothing else in between?
He wrote the Dream Warriors was his concept, and he wrote the original screenplay, and he was on board to direct. But then they did an overhaul of it with other writers, and Robert Shea let Chuck Russell direct instead. Which made Wes Craven doubly mad because Chuck Russell had made Dreamscape, which Wes Craven always held as something. He read the script of Nightmare on Elm Street before it was made and stole that concept.
What a son of a bitch.
Yeah.
That's funny because, so like the two for me, biggest of the franchise, the first one in Dream Warriors.
I think that's true for most everybody, people.
Right?
For me, Dream Warriors is number three.
After what, one and?
New Nightmare.
New Nightmare. You know, I know I think I was so soured on the franchise that I never saw New Nightmare.
Well, that's the thing.
And
it's
hit.
I think that's true, and a lot of people have, but this is like a meta horror movie before meta horror movies.
Right, I remember
it was a predecessor to Scream. I mean, I know he didn't write Scream, but Scream was basically New Nightmare.
Yeah, I remember in a different genre, seeing some scenes from New Nightmare after Scream, but knowing it was written before, and was having the same thought that you're expressing right now. And there's a part where I remember, because I don't think I've seen it all, but I do remember a sequence where the robot hand, Freddy Krueger's cut off robot hand, comes to life.
Comes to life.
Yeah.
And slices up a guy's
hand. Yeah. While, and it's like, oh, this prop's crazy, dude. What the fuck, man? Yeah,
it fucks up somebody's arm.
I remember that scene. But I don't know why I didn't watch the whole thing.
It's crazy because Langenkamp's actually good in the movie.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't say her turn in the first Nightmare on Elm Street is good acting.
Nancy?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if anybody's doing good acting.
Yeah.
But it's maybe. But it's great.
Maybe Depp. No, it's great. They're serviceable actors, I suppose, with a great script. But all I'm saying is you can see her life experience in New Nightmare.
She's a human adult
deep,
with some
good
shit.
Performance.
Yeah. I remember clearly I saw some 10-minute section where she's also shooting the movie.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, oh, Nancy, who I loved as a child. She's turning in a good performance. She's doing it up.
Yeah,
she's a human adult with some serious shit.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
Bringing it.
She was bringing it.
Letting you as the viewer
in. And it was good. She played. I mean, I think what she did really well as a kid, which is hard to do, is she did play terror really well.
Oh yeah, yeah. She was good
at being scared, and that's really hard to do.
I have a complete inability to judge how she was in the first because I'm sure I was at an age when I saw that the first time that any girl of high school age was just beautiful and disorienting because I was probably 13. I was probably 12 or 13, a 17-year-old girl was just anything was magical. Yeah. So I don't know that.
Yeah.
And she's obviously beautiful. She's a, teen movie star.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if I had any ability to judge her acting.
I'm only judging her acting after having seen this movie
17 times.
Way more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen this movie at least 50 times.
I've probably seen
it. And again, compared it to at least 50 times watching New Nightmare.
Yeah, I don't have that part of it. That's the big... I have probably seen Nightmare on Elm Street 17 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's not even a fair assessment to compare a young actor to...
It's a different person.
A mature... Yeah, exactly.
Well, every seven years, your cells are completely...
But I guess that's why I love it, because I think she's so good in New Nightmare. It's a D. Wallace level performance.
Tonight, I guess what I'm going to do is I got to leave now and watch New Nightmare.
All right. Well, we'll see you later.
That's it. And all my other plans are changed.
Well, that seems like a good reason to end this broadcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, and particularly Jerome Depardieu. No.
Butler. Jerome Depardieu.
Jerome Depardieu. Butler, and lady, the rest of you listening out there.
Gerard Butler.
That's why I said Depardieu, because I got his first name. I was just trying to train wreck the whole thing.
I just did that,
Thank you for being such a great audience for our special guest star, Todd Robert Anderson, on the Toncast. Have a good evening.